ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 14, Pregnancy of Diti in the Evening. Text 40.
Praninam hanyamananam
Praninam hanyamananam
Ninanam akritagasam
Srinam
nigramananam
Srinam nigramananam
Kopiteshu Mahatmasu
Kopiteshu Mahatmasu
Praninam Hanyamananam
Praninam Hanyamananam
Dinanam Akritagasam
Dinanam Akritagasam
Dinanam Nigramananam
Dinanam Nigramananam
Kopiteshu Mahatmasu
Kopiteshu Mahatmasu
Translation. They will kill poor, faultless living entities, torture women, and enrage the great souls. Demoniac activities are predominant when innocent, faultless living entities are killed. Women are tortured, and the great souls engaged in Krishna consciousness are enraged. In a demoniac society, innocent animals are killed to satisfy the tongue. And women are tortured by unnecessary sexual indulgence. When there are women and meat, there must be liquor and sex indulgence. When these are prominent in society, by God's grace, one can expect a change in the social order, by the Lord himself, or by his bona fide representatives. Om Jnana Chimananasya, Jnananjana Smakaya. Chakra Militamina Tasmai Sri Guru. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Guru Vandarinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. You are hearing Kashyapa speak to his wife, Diti. And Kashyapa, in this situation, is kind of a mixed bag. He can see clearly before their little adventure and after. At the same time, he was not strong enough to resist the situation. In fact, he kind of indicated from the beginning that, well, so now he's presenting to Diti the effects of their activity. He didn't have to wait until the children are born to understand what they'd be like. With his sage vision, he could see that it was the wrong time, the wrong place, the consciousness was bad, and therefore the children are going to be horrible. This is the power of real vision. This is the power of real understanding. People today, they like to talk about, well, we're just going to learn our lesson, we're just living the life, and you know, what comes to us, we learn, everything's a learning experience. It's that one program at Jonathan's Place, Tuesday night. Very nice people came, 20 people of all ages, of all ethnic backgrounds. And as always, a few of them always said that, yes, you know, what is the meaning of my life? Learning the lesson. And of course I always say, well, what is the lesson you're supposed to learn since you're busy learning? We don't know. And amazingly, so many of them, whether they were young or in their 40s, they all said, we just don't know what to do with our life. We just, like, we're at the end of our rope. What's supposed to be happening? Now, The problem, as I've explained before, is that people cannot see the end results of sense gratification. The glare of Maya is so strong now that even our devotees are becoming affected by this materialistic propaganda in which you just focus on the front end of the situation, you don't see the tail end. You just see opportunity for fulfillment and creative expression and sensual expression and all these things, but you can't see the tail end, which is suffering, which is misery. That has to come about because any time you do something that increases your bodily and mental identification, there must be suffering. So these people who I was talking with on Tuesday night, they were seeing the tail end. They had tried to enjoy in so many ways, and it didn't happen. They don't understand, of course, at their stage, that because of their involvement in the kind of society they live in, they must be blind. They must have no vision because of the nature of their association, the nature of the culture they've grown up in. Now just look at the difference between Kashyapa and the people you have today. Kashyapa, as Prabhupada writes, the learned Kashyapa could foresee the character of the sons who will be born of the condemned womb of Diti. It must be, I can imagine it must be kind of a very heavy thing for a husband to be able to foresee these kind of things. My wife's womb is condemned because of our activity. And he's getting on her case in this verse. I have the preceding verse also. Now remember, previously, before the episode unfolded and before they had their liaison, he was calling her, "O queen of the home," and yes, we are, a husband is so indebted to a good wife, and how can we ever pay back our debt to you? And please try to understand, it's not a good time for sex life right now. Try to understand it, you know, it's not the best thing. He wasn't very strong in his resistance. Now, after the activity, he comes down with it. What does he say? Abhadra, inauspicious one. And also, he calls her haughty. So he's really, he's on a really heavy. Look and see what kind of sons are going to be born. They're going to cause constant lamentation to all the three worlds. And then today we find out they're going to kill poor, faultless living entities, torture women, and enrage the great souls. Now what Kashyapa is talking about was very unusual during the time he was speaking. But now it's the normal thing. Killing poor, faultless living entities, that's a normal part of society today to satisfy the tongue by killing all kinds of creatures. And what about enraging the great souls? Yes, Krishna conscious devotees, although they don't think they're great, they are enraged by seeing the purposeful destruction of human values and human dignity. That's what it means to grow up in the world today. All your integrity, all your dignity, all your fine, subtle, nice qualities are destroyed. So naturally, devotees are enraged by this. It's an emotional reaction. You see, bhakti yoga is full of all the emotions. They all have their proper use in Krishna's service, as Narottam Das Thakur points out. Kama Krishna Kamarpane, lust to use everything in Krishna's service, become angry when the great souls are offended, when Krishna's offended, become angry to see people's opportunities for becoming Krishna conscious destroyed. This is how a devotee has a full emotional life. Sometimes we hear that devotees say, "Well, I've neglected my emotional life, and I've served Krishna for so many years doing bhakti yoga, but what about my own emotional development?" Narottam Das Thakur, the acharyas, give us full opportunity for emotional development in Bhakti Yoga, far more than you'll find on the material platform. But because we get a little bewildered sometimes, we think, oh, the opportunity for emotional fulfillment and development is limited in Bhakti Yoga, but the material world will allow the full play of my emotions. And then when I experience the full play of my emotions, then I'll be able to come back and perform devotional service. No, this is a great misunderstanding of Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga, out of necessity, has a preparatory stage in which discipline is required. Austerity is required. What does austerity mean? Voluntarily accepting inconvenience for a higher purpose. And the amazing thing is, you must be austere in material life. Everyone who works knows that you have to accept so much abuse and inconvenience and personal minimization just to get your paycheck. Everyone knows that. Yet somehow or other we think that devotional service is the only thing that it has its austerities. Can you imagine? A lot of our devotees haven't had real working experience in the material world. So suppose you call up your employer and say, "Oh, I feel like I'm coming down with a cold. I don't think I'll come in today." There's no way that's going to be accepted. But as a devotee, you know, you can actually give those kind of excuses and, okay, Prabhu, just take a little more rest and come into the office or, you know, come into the kitchen when you can or try to get a replacement. You try to say that thing in material life, forget it. How many sick days do you have left? That's the answer. You're out of sick days? Yeah, look. So, why do we think that austerity is only regarding devotional service? Human relations outside of bhakti require such tolerance. But because there's the hope of wonderful sex life, you agree to accept all these miseries. You actually agree, yes, I'll sign the dotted line as long as there's hope that I'll get a certain reward. You actually agree. Prabhupada uses the phrase, you concede to a life of miseries because you want sense gratification. So, okay, there'll be miseries, but there'll also be the sense gratification. So, all right, let the miseries come, I don't mind, as long as I have this. And what does Queen Kunti, the liberated woman, what does she pray? Let the miseries come, I don't mind, as long as I have Krishna. So here we see the contrast, the great divide. Am I going to perform austerities for the sake of pleasing Krishna, or will I uselessly and foolishly perform austerities just for sense gratification? But austerities you must perform. That's the way things are rigged. The quicker you rise up to that, this is the way the game is played, the quicker you can start to become successful in the execution of your life. So don't get all fizzy and dizzy in the mind just because there's some inconveniences in devotional service and you can't do what you want at every moment. Can you do that in material life? Of course not. In material life, there are sometimes years of preparation that you have to undergo before you can do something. 4 years at university because you hope this will lead to a good job. In developing human relations, 2 or 3 years trying to get to know the person before you think maybe this could be a lasting relationship. Why is it that we cannot undergo any preparation and some years of spiritual character consolidation in order to be valuable to Srila Prabhupada's mission? Why is that? This we have to ask ourselves. It's not like, hey, once I get this load of bhakti off my shoulders and, you know, once I get away from Manatattva and the Brahmacharya Ashram, then, you know, hey, I'm on easy street. It just doesn't work like that in this world. It does not work like that. You're going to have a taskmaster upon you at every moment in this material world. and some of those taskmasters are part of your own body. So we just forget this notion that there's some pot of gold waiting for us out in the material world, and no one's going to tell us what to do, and we're going to be able to act in a way that completely fulfills us. If you had come to this preaching engagement Tuesday night, you would have heard from these people. It's just not like that. And then they're in their 40s and they really feel ripped off because they're getting old and they have never been fulfilled, although they've done everything that you can do in L.A. to satisfy the senses. Now the ladies are in their 40s, the men are in their 40s. You know, youthful vitality has left them, and what's coming up next? Old age. This is the way the real world works. Now, another interesting point is that this is a very wonderful sociological point Prabhupada makes, we should remember. You heard in the verse that Kashyapa is predicting these horrible sons that will come of Diti will torture women. Now, maybe when you first heard that, you thought, you know, he meant that, you know, they would like electrocute them, beat them. What does Prabhupada describe in the purport? He says that in a demoniac society, women are tortured by unnecessary sexual indulgence. They're made to think this is what will satisfy you. Give the man this, and you'll be happy. The man will be happy, and in this way, you'll all live happily ever after. Material nature arranges the female psychology such that she always wants to be noticed. And so, of course, the men come along and say, hey, you know the male program, you just do like this and that, and I'll notice you. Of course, the ladies don't understand. They're signing up for a program of torture. But because they want to be noticed so badly, because they want security, they want the female dream fulfilled. There'll be someone at every moment to emotionally reciprocate with me. There'll be a nice house. It'll be a warm emotional atmosphere. At every moment, my emotions will be satisfied. Because they have the female vision, the female dream, they surrender to the male dream. And what is the male dream? It's got nothing to do with all those things. The male program is pretty gross. That's the way material nature has arranged it. So then you have this like competition. Okay, well, you've got your dream, I've got my dream. So how can we kind of trade off with each other so we can try to fulfill each other's dreams? So in this way, the ladies, even thinking they're liberated, thinking they're free, thinking they're in control, they're simply subjecting themselves to torture. This is what's going on today in the name of pleasure. Unless there is Krishna consciousness, how can there be any self-respect? I always like to make this point in preaching. How can you have self-respect? How can you have integrity unless you become Krishna conscious? Without bhakti, you must become caught in this dream world, the male dream, the female dream, exploitation, torturing each other. There's no other hope. You have to do that. And that reality is so clear today. You have to choose how you're going to be absorbed. The Maya society is so powerful these days, and then there's Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement, which gives powerful engagement in the Lord's service. You get a chance to choose. Now, this verse describing these two boys, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, they're not born yet, they've just been conceived, but Kashyapa is already understanding, oh, there's going to be havoc coming out of this union. They remind us of the two sons of Kuvera that we sing about every morning. These two sons of Kuvera, another Kuvara and Manigriva, they were living the high life. They were really in the fast lane in the heavenly planets on Swargaloka. And although they were sons of a devotee, remember Kuvera is a devotee, although they were Kuvera's sons, because of such wealth that was easily available, they became corrupted. And they became so degraded that they were swimming naked in the Mandakini Ganges River with young girls, drunk, so drunk their eyes were rolling with intoxication. And then, as you know, Narada Muni came by. The girls still had some common sense. Oh, Narada Muni, we don't want him to see us naked. He may curse us. But the two boys, as you know, couldn't care less. This is how blind they were. Now, their state of consciousness, their mental state would be glorified today. Oh, they're so blind. They're out of it. People, you know, they crave for that kind of condition on weekends. And they can work hard all week and then become blind on the weekends. Then they go, oh, it's been a successful weekend. So the condition that Nalakubra and Manigriva were in is a glorious state according to today's Kali Yuga standard. And just think about it. Totally stoned, splashing in a river with young girls, everyone unclothed. Oh, this is like the Kali Yuga spiritual perfection. So Narada Muni saw that these two boys didn't care, and he decided to curse them. Because they have so much money hanging around, they've become so degraded. He cursed them, as you know, to become trees. But he put a special conclusion to the curse, that they would be liberated when they see face to face the Supreme Lord in Vrindavan. Now, Prichit Maharaj was very curious about this curse. Prichit Maharaj knows how to zero in on the central issue. He can teach you that in Bhagavatam if you follow his lead. He said, wait a minute, what is Narada Muni, the great soul, doing cursing? Is there some kind of revenge he wants? But how can a great soul be concerned with revenge? What's going on here? So in response to that question by Prichit Maharaj, Shukadeva Goswami explains how actually Narada Muni was giving great benediction to these two boys. And then you think of the scene of Krishna being bound to the grinding mortar. He actually was giving Mother Yashoda a hard time. He was not letting her bind him. And she was getting to the point where she was going to give up. She had brought rope after rope after rope, and nothing would bind Krishna. She actually got to the point that she was going to just give up and admit defeat. But at that moment, Krishna decided, no, no, I'll be defeated by your love. She had already given up, but Krishna said, all right, you can bind me. I'll agree because of your love. This is the special moment. The elderly gopis were smiling, watching this situation. Mother Yashoda was smiling, because they were all thinking, what's with this boy? We can't get a rope around him. And then Mother Yashoda was going to give up, but Krishna agreed, you may bind me. Now, actually, Krishna is already bound by Mother Yashoda's love. He's already caught. But he's enacting this whole pastime just to increase the loving exchanges. So she binds Krishna to the grinding mortar, and then goes off and she does some household duties. The leela doesn't end there, because Krishna is thinking, my great devotee Narada Muni has stated that I would liberate those two Yamala Arjun trees which contain sons of Kuvera. So Krishna proceeds towards those trees, and he walks through them in such a way that the mortar drags down both trees. And then these two shining, effulgent persons jump out and immediately start offering prayers to the Supreme Lord. They explain that, yes, we realize we got the mercy of Narada Muni, therefore you're having something to do with us. This is a very important point about Nalakubra and Manigriva. Actually, Krishna didn't want to have anything to do with them. But because of Narada Muni, not only did Krishna have something to do with them, but he gave them the highest perfection. Tata prema bhakti sakame priyasya namo shegrahomesu damo dareha. So in that prayer we think, for asking, you, just like you gave this mercy to another Kuvar and Manigira, please give that prema bhakti to me. There was no other reason than Narada Muni. And a subordinate, smaller reason, Sanatana Goswami explains, even though Kuvera is the father, is attached to opulence, he's still a devotee. So Krishna also took that into account. But mainly, it was all because of Narada Muni. But then again, yes, they're also sons of Kuvera, he's my devotee, so I'll give them prema bhakti. This shows you how Krishna is independent. You can start thinking, why did Krishna give these guys prema bhakti? Complete debauches, who were cursed to stand as trees for 100 years. But Krishna is independent, he does what he likes. And the greatest proof of Krishna's independence is that he comes as Lord Chaitanya and distributes prema bhakti in this horrible time of Kali Yuga. That shows you Krishna is free to do whatever he wants. He can give prema bhakti to anyone. Generally we say you have to have qualification. But in this case, those two boys who stood as trees had no qualification. The Shastra makes this point clear. There's no reason that Krishna should have anything to do with Nala Kuba or Manigrupa. You can think about that. Not only was Krishna acting independently to free these two boys, but he also acted independently by coming under the control of his devotees. He chose to do that. So Prabhupada makes the point that it's not that Krishna agrees to come under the control of the devotee, so to speak, but he agrees to come under the control of the devotee's love. This is what rules Vrindavan, the pure loving exchanges. In this way, Krishna gets the name Vritya Vashyata. He agrees to come under the control of his servants. But he has so many other servants, he doesn't come under their control. So Shukadeva Goswami goes down the list. He doesn't come under the control of Brahma. He doesn't come under the control of Shiva. He doesn't come under the control of Indra. In fact, the whole universe containing these great controlling demigods is controlled by Krishna. Yet that same Krishna agrees to come under the control of his devotee's love. Isn't this wonderful? Shukadeva Goswami wants you to think about the power of bhakti. That is the whole purpose of these Damodarastic prayers. We sing them as part of the Urja Vrata, the vow performed during Karti to satisfy Urjeshwari. That is Srimati Radharani. She is the queen of the Kartik vow, or the Urja vow. So, Shukadeva Goswami wants you to understand what's going on. Think about it. You're interested in loving affairs, you're interested in sweet relationships. Well, think about this one. And then in the next verse, he explains three times, Nale Bhire, Brahma couldn't get this, Shiva couldn't get this, even Lakshmi Devi couldn't get this. They couldn't get what Mother Yasoda got. Brahma, he's the Adi Kavi. He's the original scholar of the universe. Shiva is the topmost Vaishnava, Vaishnavanam Yatashambhu. Lakshmi is always associated with Narayan. She's always there, close to his body. But they couldn't get it. Three times Shukadeva Goswami is letting you know this is how great the nectar is that Mother Yasoda got. And then we get the famous verse, Nayam Sukapa Bhagavan, Dehi Nam Gopika Sutta, Gyaninas Chatma Bhutanam, Yatha Bhakti Matamaha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Son of Mother Yasoda, cannot be obtained by those who identify with the body, those who are great yanis, metaphysical speculators, those who are yogis practicing austerities and penances and mysticism. They cannot get this Yasoda Nandana. But who can get? Those who follow in the footsteps of these spontaneous lovers of Krishna in Vrindavan. That same Krishna who agreed to be bound by Mother Yasoda, now, in his bound state, is releasing Nala Kuvara and Manigriva. So this is a great paradox. And we sing about that. Kuparatma Jaya Bada Murjaya Yadva. Krishna's Bada, Bada Hari. The Lord Hari is bound. But what's he doing in his bound state? He's releasing Navakubra and Manigriva. So even Krishna himself smiles about this. Damodar smiles. Like, here I am, totally bound by the ropes of the elderly gopi's love, especially Mother Yasoda. And yet, these two boys, Navakubra and Manigriva, they're praying to me and begging me for freedom from material existence, and they want to be established in my service. Isn't this funny? Krishna's smiling. Noticing the irony of the whole situation. And of course, you know, afterwards, when the two boys, Navakubra and Manigriva, asked for the Lord's permission to go back to the heavenly planets, you know, they circumambulated them three times. What was the last thing they asked for? Let us always engage our senses in your service. We want to hear about you, talk about you, engage our body in your service. They asked for that, and then they left. Immediately, the cowherd men of Vrindavan come. And what is this, baby Krishna, next to these two huge trees that have crashed down? How did this happen? Our baby Krishna could have been killed. And the other little cowherd boys, they're telling the truth. We know, we saw, Krishna did it. No doubt about it. Krishna knocked these trees down, and then two shiny enemies came out. But the elderly cowherd men, they were, I don't know if we can believe this. They were seeing through vatsalya ras, paternal affection. So there's no way they're going to think that this little boy could have done that. But then they had some doubts, because they're always in tune with the sadhus. Well, Sadhu Gargarishi said that this child could be equal to Narayan. Well, maybe he could have done it. Just maybe. In this way, life in Vrindavan goes on. And this month, we get to meditate on this pastime. And it goes deeper and deeper into our hearts. And by singing this song every morning, it seems like a simple thing. Don't underestimate Prabhupada's program. He's giving us the best way how to bring out of the heart the deepest mellows of love of Krishna. So, you sing that every morning with Damodarastic, and you are pleasing Srimati Radharani, and year after year you'll notice the deepest, purest emotions in your heart start to develop and rise up. Any questions?
Why is Kashyapa putting all the blame on Niti? Why is he taking any of the blame?
This is a man's world. Well, Prabhupada gets on his case in the footnotes. Prabhupada says he was weak. He shouldn't have given in. But she was getting most of the blame, because she was being a real heavy gun. And maybe it is that Kashyapa, you know, it was a tough situation, you know. These things happen, you know, life is not all black and white, but at the same time, he is her spiritual master. So, he's Grihapati, and he's chastising her, like, just see what's going to be the outcome. Maybe you could say that he wanted some help in controlling the senses. He didn't get that from her. And, I mean, she's quite a powerful lady, you know. So, although in the verses, Kashyapa doesn't indicate that he's at fault, Prabhupada gives him his due in the purpose. Prabhupada gets on his case. So, we can look at it in that way. The Bhagavatam likes to emphasize different things at different moments, different verses. So in this case, it's emphasized like that. In other situations, the man will be upgraded. But this is chapters focusing on Diti. And we're getting an insight into what Diti thinks and how Kashyapa is responding to it. So yes, Kashyapa might be thinking it's a man's world, but look what rules him. That's the actual reality. Just look what controlled it. Therefore, the message you get from this chapter is that it's a woman's world. But, being a typical male, he doesn't want to think that. Remember Muchikunda's words? During the day, I'm on my throne, I'm ruling the whole world, people come and bow down to me, their helmets crashing at my feet. But what happens at night? I must go to the chambers of my queens, fall down at their feet, and then present gratification. So who rules? I like that. Yeah. The whole point is, what's convenient for your senses? If killing animals is convenient for giving a good taste to your tongue, do it. If killing in the womb is convenient so that you don't have to work to support children, do it. Whatever is convenient for your senses at the moment, this is the culture we live in now, and it's worse now than ever before. So you have to decide, are you going to be a part of that, or are you going to be a part of something else? You have to decide. You start by following Srila Prabhupada, who told us that here in Los Angeles, I remember in 76, he said, I am that resident of Vrindavan. He was under challenge because some devotees were misusing Prabhupada's books to read only certain sections and imagine they were on a high platform, and they were saying that the leaders of ISKCON were exploiting them by engaging in preaching activities and keeping them from the real nectar. And so they went to see Prabhupada and they said, well, don't your books say to follow the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan? And Prabhupada said, I am that resident of Vrindavan. In other words, you follow my program, and then you'll really find out who you should be following in Vrindavan. And Giriraj Maharaj also told me that Yamuna asked him this question, are you that resident of Vrindavan? And Prabhupada, he just bowed his head, and he didn't answer directly, but by his silence indicated like that. So if we stick with Prabhupada's program, his Vrindavan program. Yes, Prabhupada has given us a Vrindavan program. You'll gradually realize who in Vrindavan you are truly and spiritually inclined towards. Even as late as 1977, I saw Chandrasekhar was giving one remembrance of Bhakti Trumar's had it. Even in 1977, one Indian man was asking Prabhupada, like, okay, you're about to leave now, so how am I going to find out what my Swarup City is, my eternal identity? And Prabhupada would answer, what is this rascaler, Swarup City? What is this rascaler? What is this rascaler? And then finally he said, when you're qualified, I'll tell you. He made it all so easy for us. But from beginning to end, Prabhupada made Krishna consciousness so easy for us. But what's our business? How to make it all complicated, and maybe Prabhupada didn't give us everything and we need to go to somebody else, and on and on and on it goes. All right. Thank you all. Oh, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.